If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your websites, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios, powered by Verizon, 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
This hour of afternoons is brought to you by East Coast Metal Roofing. Save 10% on a brand new metal roofing system during their Spring Into Savings event. Visit eastcoastmetalroofing.com for details.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
O'clock hour here at WEEI Afternoons. Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, Ted Johnson's off today. We'll get the big linebacker, the big old neck, back tomorrow. I call him the neck. It's not something weird unless you go to Urban Dictionary. That was just his nickname from John Madden.
Remember when you learned the true meaning of that term, Andy?
I don't know if that's the true meaning. I just need to, just because it's on show, Urban Dictionary, there's a lot of things on Urban Dictionary that people don't use in regular, everyday language, culture, social media, and whatever.
Yeah. No, obviously not. Like, when you have a glass of tea in the afternoon, you have to dip your tea bag in the hot water.
Correct. That's just a thing. We don't go the other, all the other stuff is just people being weird and creepy on the internet.
Like oyster catchers.
Oyster catchers.
Right.
Did you see they played that like champs? Before we get to the three-point stance, they played that like champs, the response they got, and then they turned it into a charitable donation. A big chunk of the merchandise is going towards women's charities. They like,
now that's how you internet.
Now, I don't know if it was a multi-step plan when they enacted it from the very beginning.
No, it was not. That was not a planned viral stunt. This went through Ted, Diane, Carol in marketing, standards and practices, and everyone was like, oh, it's great. What do you mean? What does it look like?
I can't, permission to speak freely? Can HR sign off on my response before I say it? But
not
no,
a shot.
Then they rebounded in tremendous fashion. They played that perfectly. So, but nope, it's 3 o'clock. Fitzy's here. I'm here. Dan Ball's here. Stiz is here. That means it's time for the 3-point stance.
319. 318. 318. 318. Yeah, there we go. What's up?
It's the 3-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pasternak! A hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A 3-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
All right, fellas. It is 3 o'clock. It's time for the 3-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons. The rules are plain and simple. We go around the room and present our opening take on some of the biggest stories happening in the world of sports and sometimes beyond. Our order for today is Andy Hart. Welcome back, Mr. Hart. We then have Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and in lieu of Ted Johnson, who will rejoin tomorrow at 3 p.m., I will jump in and present a three-point stance to wrap things up. And then after everybody goes for 60 seconds or thereabouts to present their opening take, we'll open it up. Thank you. For discussion, Andy Hart, after your pause, it is your turn to go. I'm very excited for this one without giving too much away. So are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Well, your 60 seconds begins right now. Good luck.
So I am breaking new ground here in the three-point stance, and I'm utilizing my time to respond to a single texter from the 617 who's been on my ass for weeks, and especially today. I can't count them, but they've been flowing in like water in a stream after a melting snowstorm. And the last one is, God, Andy, you're such an ass, all in caps. Every text is all in caps. And this all goes back to my love for, my affinity for Jaylen Brown. God forbid I like an all-NBA player who won the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, NBA Finals MVP, and helped you get that banner number 18 in the rafters. But after last night's game, which wasn't JB's best, and he's had some ups and some downs this season, this guy on the 617, or gal, I'm not going to discriminate the hate. I'm hating back at you, and it's not gender specific. This gal or guy is all over me. This, now your guy can carry the team because Tatum's hurt. Oh, you're king, Andy. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, he can carry you like he did last postseason. Even Stiz the other day was replaying the three he hit in Indiana in the corner. What a great play that was. Jaylen Brown is the reason you have banner number 18, and he's probably going to be the reason you have banner number 19. Get off his ass. Respect him. Show the man the support that he deserves in this city.
All right, and thanks for tuning in, everyone, to today's episode of Winning Friends and Crushing Ratings with Andy Hart.
Hate is going to hate.
Wow.
All right. Andy has completed his diatribe against one, count them, one texter on our text line, 617-779-7937.
It's almost like, Dan, it's like because Andy was absent yesterday, he had to come in with a dual-edged, extra hard three-point stance today to make up for his Monday absence.
No, I'm just hating on that guy that hates on me. You got to return hate with hate. That's how you stop hate with more hate.
That is definitely what Tom Brady and Snoop Dogg were talking about in that Super Bowl commercial. I remember that's what they said.
Choose hate, everybody. You know how the saying goes. Okay, Fitzy, it is your turn to roll. I will let you have a quick swig of your beverage and then ask you the question that everybody's waiting for me to ask. Are you ready?
For some football, yes, indeed I am, Dan.
Awesome. Well, if football is the case, regardless, your 60 seconds starts right now.
I'm not going to choose hate. I'm going to choose great, or at least I'm going to choose decency in this particular case. Earlier today, during his weekly hit with the Midday Show, Tom Curran refuted stories and rumors that the New England Patriots were in fact not in on wide receiver DK Metcalf coming from Seattle to ultimately Pittsburgh. That the Patriots were actually in on him and tried to make a trade or find a way to convince DK to come play for the Patriots, and that he just never wanted to come here in the first place. I'm sure the money would have lined up just the same as well. Were they able to swing a trade with the Seahawks? Now, what's the point of all this? Why do I bring this back up again after people had seemed to get over not being able to acquire a proper wide receiver one this offseason? It's as simple as this. It is more important than ever for the New England Patriots to have a great rest of free agency, a terrific draft, a competent offseason to continue being adults in the room all the way to and into the 2025 season, where they prove to the rest of the NFL that they are not the sad sack organization that they have devolved into over the last couple of years, post-Brady and post-prime Belichick. The Pats need to be competent. The Pats need to win again this season, Andy, to prove to people that if you want to win championships, you got to come to New England all over again.
At the buzzer, he nails it.
Wait, he doesn't get the horn?
What are you talking about?
He doesn't get the homer horn? Thank you! Let's be fair.
I deserve it as well, but I know we'll debate and legislate momentarily, but it's a tough point to argue. Like, the onus on the Patriots needing to win may be greater than ever. When you've got the money, and even now the money isn't good enough to convince people to come here, that beyond the suck tax, it's the you just suck period? No.
Oh, no, you suck again.
We just suck, period.
Okay. I will jump in with my three-point stance before we open up conversation. So I will ask my friend Stiz. Stiz, am I ready?
60 seconds on the clock, Dan.
Go.
Okay, so this one kind of goes on the heels of Fitzy's a bit about being competent and winning and trying to make the Patriots a bit more, a bit better as a destination for players. The conversation late last week into early this week was Stephon Diggs, who was really the one big name on offense to this point that we've heard actually visit with the Patriots and seem to show some modicum of interest. But the conversation that we heard from fans who were engaging with us and that we saw on social media was, this guy's a headache, he's a pain, he's known to be a cancer at certain points in locker rooms. Why are you cutting off your nose to spite your face and bringing in a bad culture guy when you're trying to establish this culture? There are two things that come to mind, and I'll do them quickly. One, I think you're in a position where you might be able to look past it with one player because of the talent that's there. But I also don't think the culture concerns with Stephon Diggs are as bad as people make them out to be. There were circumstances where he was playing well. He was a best friend of Josh Allen and quarterbacks. Change of offensive coordinator. Contract issues later in his deals that caused those issues. So I think for a one-year contract, Stephon Diggs will not be the culture issue that Patriots fans make him out to be.
Great minds think alike. There you go.
Yeah. Boy, that was a lot of word salad by the end of it. But I got my final point out there. So on the table today is Jaylen Brown is the reason for banner number 18 and texter should leave Andy alone. We have the Patriots have to be competent and win right away to prove to fans and players that they are a worthy destination in the National Football League. And my concerns or lack thereof with Stephon Diggs' culture on a one-year contract in New England. So,
Andy, why don't you go first?
Defending mine or shooting holes in yours? Or
feel free to take a shot at Dan's or come at mine, bro.
So let's start discussing Fitzy's, because I think there is some significant truth, and we will be talking about this from a different angle later in the show. Tom Brady had an interesting post on TomBrady.com this week where he explained why he left New England, and a lot of the aggregators, Fitzy, focused on tensions. Yeah, no crap. We knew there were tensions with Bill Belichick and Guerrero and all of that. But he also detailed Fitzy, his little breakdown of how he did it and how he ranked certain categories when he was picking new teams and how he rated the importance of those and how they compared to the Patriots and all that. And I think that ties into this, what you're talking about, what the Patriots have been thought of since Brady left and sort of the view of the organization. The question I have for you, though, is I agree they need to be competent, and I think they're already more competent. I'm going to make a bold statement, Fitzy. In comparison to last year, 0-17 is not in play. I'm going to say it again. 0-17 is not in play for your 2025 Patriots.
Dear listeners, this goes back to Andy on the Six Rings podcast, August of 2024.
No, earlier.
Oh, even earlier.
I believe June we did it.
Maybe midsummer, if you will. Early summer. Late spring, even. Andy said on the Six Rings podcast, I think this team is so bad coming out of the draft and with the dysfunction, the air of dysfunction, the stench of disorganization, Andy thought 0-17 was on the table, which is why I celebrated so wildly when the Patriots beat the Bengals, foolish me, because 0-17 was officially DOA.
They also celebrated wildly and might be part of the reason why they stunk most of the rest of the
Gatorade season. Showers.
Gatorade shower.
But my question for you is, you said they have to win. What does that mean?
Be competent. Yeah, they need to look like a competent football team. And winning cures all.
Yes.
You can be in every game. They could go 0-17 this year and lose all 17 games by a combined 19 points. And people might say, like, oh, man, this Pats team, they're a me away from not being 0-17 anymore, says free agent to be.
They're the best 0-17 team I've ever seen.
Greatest winless team in history.
So you don't have a number in mind? Like, they don't need to win
9-8.
They need to get to 9-8.
9-8 is on the table. 9-8 is doable, and 9-8 tells people coming off of 4-13 with Drake May, with a revitalized, spiritually reawakened Josh McDaniels, and with a tough as nails focused Mike Vrabel, that they are ready to really compete and get back after their crown that Buffalo has had for 5 years and probably will wear for six.
Yes, Dan Ball.
Wait, so do they need to win 9 games and be a playoff contender, or can they go 0-17 but they're a competitive 0-7? Like, are both winning or being an 0-17 quote unquote competent team on the table. I feel like those are two kind of Fitzy different examples. I just wanted to make sure I understood where you were coming from there.
You understood where I was coming from, and oftentimes what I will do is contradict myself, Dan. Thank you very much. Could they be competitive in every game and convince people that it's worth coming here because, like I said, they're a me, they're a this player, they're a two of us away from winning and getting back to prominence? Sure. But I think the best case scenario for the Patriots is to be a badass, hard-out football team this year and win more games than you lose. I mean, I think 9-8, there'd be no more questions of, what's the direction? Are they any good? Is Drake good? Does Vrabel still have it? That would solve so many problems and answer so many questions quickly.
Yes, I think they need to win more games. I think that's where we are. 4-13. I think bare minimum. I'm going to set a number. I think they have to win six games. I think they have to win six games for there to be some sort of, and we've debated other things like last year. Remember our discussion, if they had won the last four games of the year, would that have been different than just winning four over the course of the year?
Like the 93 Patriots.
Yes.
That would have made a massive difference, but they were quite the opposite.
So there are definitely different ways to get to the end goal of feeling good when the season ends, even though you're not a playoff team or even though you didn't have a winning record. I think they need to win six games. I think it's not crazy to win six games in the NFL, especially looking at their home schedule and the money they spent in the offseason, all these stats. What is it, 3.5 wins, Fitzy? When you lead the league in spending in the offseason, you're supposed to add 3.5 wins or whatever to your team. So they should be at 7.5 wins by the end of the season. I'm going a little lower. I'll give them six. You win six, Mike Vrabel, and you have the ship kind of headed in the right direction.
No, I got to take the over on your 7.5, and I'm going to give him an extra one just for the coaches on top of the players, on top of a foolhardy faith that I have that they're going to crush this draft coming up in 4 weeks.
Just to be clear, you're going to be critical of them if they don't win nine games.
You think that'll
be coming up significantly short of what they need to
accomplish.
You've
been stunned by how critical I've been of the team the last couple of years. Me, Mr. Foxborough fanboy.
Well, they
Mr.
sucked, everything. Though.
All right. Well, it was easier, I guess, then. Will I be critical of them once again? Yeah, absolutely, I will.
I don't think there's a shot in hell they win nine games and you're ripping them come late December and early January.
No way.
Because I won't be ripping
them. I'd tell them I'm proud of them for accomplishing what we set out as a realistic and attainable mission.
Yeah. Okay. Dan Ball.
Yeah.
Let's get to you.
Okay.
Because I need to explain a little something to you. So
sure.
You basically said Pats fans are focusing on the wrong thing.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I did.
Okay.
Because we are talking to Patriots fans as we are in Boston.
Absolutely. I think oftentimes Patriots fans don't say, text, tweet what they actually think. They do those things of what they think they're supposed to be saying. And that's where I think this case is. I think a lot of Patriots fans in and of themselves wanted Debo, wanted DK, wanted any dink diva wide receiver that's on the open market. But they were convinced via beat reporters and a narrative from the combine through some portion of the offseason, no, the team is prioritizing culture. It's not the talent they're collecting. It's a team, and they need to bring the right people in, not just the right talent. And that is where I disagree with. They are not fixating on the wrong thing. They were led to fixate on the wrong thing based on Mike Vrabel. And now I don't know what Vrabel wants, because do I think Stephon Diggs would help this team even if he gets on the field in October?
Middle of October.
Sure. I think he would be your best receiver. And based on his track record, including last year, he's going to go out and catch six balls a game.
And I think he's also great for your young quarterback that apparently has comps to Josh Allen, which he did wonders for in the first few years.
And you can think that, but why didn't they think that? So this is where I divide a little bit for you. You're fixating on the fans and how they've voiced it.
Yeah.
I think I would fixate more on the organization and their mixed messaging of culture, 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 culture. Hey, bring Diggs in. Let's see what he can do. And did they worry about Drake May? I know others have said, I forgot who we played last week. Nah, there's no concerns about
Curran.
Curran. There's no concerns about Drake May. Well, if you have no concerns, if you believe like me that a diamond cannot be broken, then bring in all the receivers that have issues that you want if they're going to catch passes, and he's your leader who will lead them to the promised land. So I just wanted to defend fans a little bit. I think this is an issue where you should be yelling at Mike Vrabel.
Okay, well, I'd be scared of him if I was yelling at him, so I'm going to stick to fans.
But, he's a big dude.
But he is.
Very large. Football Hagrid is huge.
I take that same approach with our good friend Ted Johnson. Fitzy, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I understand the mixed messaging, but then let's go back to what I was talking about from Curran. If, in fact, they were in on DK Metcalf, that eliminates some of the mixed messaging that we're talking about here. Like, they knew that they desperately needed their A.J. Brown or equivalent therein for the quarterback. They knew they needed a wide receiver one. They knew they needed an alpha who had accomplished a lot in this league to come in and tell the rest of the wide receivers here on the flagship station. Shut up, Stiz. To convince the rest of the receivers that, hey, guess what? If you guys want the ball thrown your way, if you think you're worthy of a target, you're going to have to come through me and convince your quarterback to throw it to you and not me. See, I don't want this wide receivers room being chock full of feelings and being S-A-W-F-T. I would love an accomplished hard ass to get in there and tell him, hey, if you guys want targets, then you're gonna have to be better than me because I consider myself number one and the main guy the quarterback should throw it to.
I think we're going to continue this culture conversation because I also leave the door open for it spread through the media like wildfire without necessarily significant sourcing within the organization. So while I'm blaming the organization for putting a narrative out there, maybe the media was just peddling its own narrative. We'll get back to that because I do want to squeeze a call in, Fitzy. So, you know, if you have the subject line, hate Swayman, and you've been hanging on for a really long time, and you're from Lubbock, Texas, well, Eric, I got to get you on. So, Eric, what are your thoughts on Jeremy Swayman and what he is right now for the Bruins?
Well, I first want to say it didn't seem like a long wait listening to you guys argue, so I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I completely dislike Jeremy Swayman. I call him Jeremy Swayless.
Terrible.
You know, he talks about keeping receipts. Well, so do we. He wanted to reset the goalie AAV as essentially a semi-rookie, and he hasn't shown up. He hasn't stolen any games that I can recall. I will admit he hasn't had great defense in front of him because of the injuries, but when you're a guy who holds out and gets the biggest deal of a goalie that we've given, and this is the result, you better show up next year or it's going to be crushing. And I've not cared for his attitude. I think you're insulting dinks when you call him a dink because I think he is beneath that. I think he is much worse. And he better show up next year or the fans, even in Lubbock, Texas, are going to be not enjoying watching him continue to skate circles while the puck is in the back of the net. So I appreciate the shows on WEEI all day way down here in windy Lubbock. And you guys are a highlight for sure.
Thanks for the call, Eric. That was a very nice phone call, and not just because he's agreeing with me on Swayman and thinks I wasn't harsh enough saying he's being a dink these days in the way he's playing as your star goalie. But
sometimes you get the dinner, the supper, or the results season long that you deserve.
Absolutely, but it is 1 year, and that is a fair point by Stiz. It's one lost year for the Boston Bruins. It may be one lost year for Jeremy Swayman, and we'll see how he handles himself down the stretch. And more importantly, we're going to see how he handles himself next year when he's back as the Bruins franchise goaltender with a fresh start and no offseason contract issues. We'll see how that goes. 617-779-7937. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, I referenced it earlier. I was watching my Nesson last night. My guy Lou Merlone was on there down in Mexico. And the Red Sox, the Young Guns, the Big Three, Marcelo Meyer and company, were doing their thing. Talking Red Sox baseball and the building buzz up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss. The Celtics beat the Sacramento Kings on the road last night, 113-95. Per WEEI's Justin Turpin, Boston has now won 6 in a row and 21 of their last 25. And in the win, Boston's bench outscored the Kings' bench 46-18. Not all smiles, however, as Jason Tatum left the game in the third quarter with a sprained left ankle. There is currently no timetable for his return to the court. Boston visits the Phoenix Suns tomorrow night. The Bruins, meanwhile, visit the Anaheim Ducks tomorrow night. Puck drop is at 10 p.m. Boston has lost 6 in a row. The Red Sox won game one of their two-game exhibition series against the Sultanes de Monterrey in Mexico last night, 10-1. Marcelo Meyer went 2-for-4 and drove in 5 runs, and Richard Fitz started the game and looked great, going 6 innings and giving up just 1 unearned run. The teams wrap up their two-game set tonight at 7:10 p.m. Left-handed pitching prospect Shane Drohan starts for Boston, and you can listen to the game after the Christian Arcand show on WEEI FM 93.7, and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, perfecting the art of fresh. A Patriots compensation update from ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. Linebacker Christian Ellis' new deal with the Patriots is for $13.5 million over 2 years. Ellis returns to the team after the Patriots chose to match an offer sheet from the Las Vegas Raiders. And as draft rumors continue, the Tennessee Titans will hold an additional private workout with potential number one overall pick, quarterback Cam Ward. The official weight loss program of the Boston Red Sox. Make this season your season with the solution for weight loss. Awaken180weightloss.com. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up right after this.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
2-1 is ripped into right field. That's extra bases for Meyer, and it may clear the bases. Two runs are in. Wong comes to third. He will be held at the end. An absolute laser for Marcelo. Ellis throws, and Meyer drives one high and deep into right field. Adios, Marcelo. Kisses it goodbye in Mexico. And Meyer is having a huge night in a country that means so much to him. It's 7-1 Red Sox.
That's our guy Will Fleming on the call here on WEEI from last night's game between the Red Sox and the other team they were playing from Mexico.
I forgot
their name.
Romy! My homie.
Oh boy, yeah, he is in.
I gotta say,
form.
The Flem dog was feeling himself last night.
Yeah, he should be. It's an exhibition game in Mexico. Your team's playing well. You should.
So it's a Mexhibition game.
Oh boy.
Was anybody on with him, or was he just solo yesterday? I think it might have just been him exploring the space for nine innings. And the team that they're playing, by the way, is the Sultanes de Monterrey. Good luck, Andy.
The Monterrey Sultans.
The Sultans of SWAT, except they got swatted by the Red Sox, so they didn't even live up there.
Sultans of Not.
Yeah, the Sultans of Not. I had a quick question, Dan Ball, that you may not know the answer to. I should probably know the answer to, but
okay.
The T-Mobile.
That's usually how this works.
The T-Mobile patches on the Red Sox jerseys last night. What's that all about? How long is that going to be there for?
Where on the jersey were they?
It's on the sleeve. It's a massive patch on their sleeve.
Oh, so maybe that's this year's, like, they're doing jersey sponsors now, as of like a year or two ago.
It's too big. It almost is so big that it doesn't fold or round with the arm. It almost holds the jersey like flat because the patch is so big.
So is it a size of logo issue, or is it a size issue, or is it a Fanatics issue?
No. It's a size slash stiffness issue where the patch is too, like, firm. It needs to, like, roll around the arm with the sleeve.
I'll see what I can do on that.
And also, speaking of T-Mobile, they froze my computer. I'm trying to just get the box score from last night, and my computer is frozen with a massive T-Mobile ad. I'm looking at somebody's phone that has Aaron Judge on it showing that it's MLB TV or something.
Well, it could be worse. You could be watching the WEEI afternoon show or any number of programs on Twitch at twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. And just when we get to a really good point, you see just like a giant ad.
Well, they do have a curious insertion of ad technique.
502 bad gateway.
I don't have a 502 bad gateway. I just can't get to the box score because the box score doesn't exist on ESPN because apparently they don't acknowledge.
What exactly? What is the? What exactly? So I got it right here, Andy.
Exhibition games. Yeah, I'm going with it. It's bad, nothing, but I'm rolling with it.
There's nothing right. No, it's not.
I feel like that should be the slogan of this show. It's bad, but I'm rolling with it, baby.
It might actually be. We could get WEI Afternoons on the front, and on the back it could say it's bad, but I'm rolling with
yeah.
it. Here's your box score for last night's exhibition game. Your winner, if it fits, keep it rolling. Richard Fitz, keeping that nice offseason going, gave up no runs last night. Somebody by the last name of Sessa had a 20.25 ERA for the Sultanes.
I was watching.
That's former Yankee starter Luis Sessa, by the way.
Oh, he ended up in a Sessa pool.
You're going to give me a hard time for an exhibition game?
He didn't pitch well. The Red Sox took advantage of him. I'm just having fun with baseball. I learned it from Will Fleming.
I understand the etymology of said word. Thank you. Let's see. Last night, your best offensive player by far was Marcelo Meyer. Who else are you looking for? We had Duran had a couple of at-bats, a hit, two walks. Who else played?
Yeah, we should also relay what Lou predicted on.
And Ref Snyder. And Campbell, too, dude. Campbell last night. Two runs.
It's about time.
Three hits.
About time.
Two ribeyes. Only
time.
One punchado. Batted 375. You fired up for him to officially make the team or what?
Well, I think he has turned the corner, which is good because I think, as I've said, it's a bag job. They wanted him to be the second baseman. They wanted him to be on the roster. They did that. I don't know that he earned his way on the roster. I don't know that he earned the second base job, but they've kind of shown their hand by the way they've treated it. But no, he's starting to get hot at the right time. He's young. He is going to be the first of the big three that are going to do their thing. And he is adding to the buzz because that was one of the tepid issues of the spring was like they kind of want him to be something that he's not right now, and they're kind of forcing that in there, and now he's
kind of growing into it pretty quickly.
Now he's starting to pick up a little steam here, a couple extra at-bats in Mexico, get to Texas with some of the regulars that are already there, baby, and it's regular season baseball, and he can fall right in line where he doesn't have to be the next big thing. He doesn't have to win Rookie of the Year. He doesn't have to carry the team.
You know what he's got to do? Just don't be David Hamilton, Vaughn Grissom, or any of the other humps, stumble bums, stiffs, jags, and other players that have tried to man second base. He doesn't have to. Just don't be Arroyo. Don't be, you know what I mean? Like, just don't be any of these guys that have attempted to but been unable to lock down second base in the post-Pedroia era, if you will. Because it's almost like second base has been an issue the same way that, like, slot receiver has been an issue for the Patriots in the post-Edelman era.
Oh, yeah, it's been a rotating cast of characters. Hasn't really worked. I mean, the best year was probably when they forced Story there to force Xander out of action, where he was the part-time second baseman. I like Campbell, and I like that he is hitting his stride. Also, another guy who did that last night, Aroldis Chapman. Another question mark that you know I've had is the closer situation. Three strikeouts. I believe those are called punchados or something like that.
Punchados, yes.
Mexican baseball.
He pitched the seventh inning last night. He faced three. He struck out three.
And didn't do any of this. Do you look in the little column that says base on balls? Seto. That's
how would
the
you
beauty.
Like this? Guess how many guys the Red Sox walked as a team last night?
47.
Close. Just take away 47.
Zero walks in the entire game?
Zero walks. Not nada. And I got to tell
you. Big strike zones in Mexico or something?
Big.
Grande.
Mucho strike zones. Grande.
Mucho grande.
So Richard Fitz last night, six innings pitched, three hits, one run, five Ks. So I know that doesn't get added to his official spring training stats, but we were talking with, yesterday with Jen McCaffrey from The Athletic about what a pleasant surprise he's been. You know, had the four good starts last year to tune him up and prove that he might deserve a shot at the rotation. I'm wondering now, Andy, if he's going to inspire more confidence considering the end of year and spring that he's had, as opposed to, you know, let's say Hauk or Newcomb or anyone else that might be a 3, 4, 5 star. I know Hauk is slated as the two. Didn't have the best spring. Obviously, Buehler looks great. Richard Fitz looks pretty good.
Yeah, this is that point, though, and then in the next couple weeks after this, where we pick and choose what we think of spring training results, and if it suits our argument, oh, that guy had a good spring, and look at him now. He's hit the ground running in the regular season, or, oh, that guy sucked in the spring, and he's doing fine, and vice versa. Guy had a good spring, and now he stinks. We'll sort of navigate those waters as to how you feel. And I do think it actually varies by player. I think it varies by what guys go down there to accomplish. It's like, you know, I heard Ortiz on Baseball Isn't Boring with Bradfoe talking about, you know, I knew I was a good hitter. I just went there to get my timing down. I had some bad springs. I had some good springs. It wasn't the production or the end result was irrelevant to him. But that's easier to say when you're a veteran player. If you're Christian Campbell and you're battling for a job, you know, some momentum in your young pro career, it's hard to say the result doesn't matter, especially when you strike out 13 times in your first 27 at-bats or whatever the hell that was. I bet you it felt a whole heck of a lot like the results mattered to him, because that's frustrating. Now he's turned a little corner. Chapman, on the other hand, is probably at the point in his career. Unfortunately, I heard Liam Hendricks talking about this. He's also at the point in his career where the results shouldn't matter, but the really bad results he's had this spring have mattered. And it's probably costing him the closer job and that opportunity. But for young players, I do think the results matter in spring. You need to build a little confidence. You need to build a little momentum heading into the regular season. And better late than never, but I think Christian Campbell is doing that now, and that's a good thing. And I would say the same thing about Marcelo Meyer.
Boys, the Meyer game yesterday, 2 for 4, 5 RBIs. I know you guys both picked him to make the team out of camp, and he didn't, but he can't be too far behind.
No.
It's got to be an infield injury, and he's up kind of conversation.
Absolutely. Loomer, that was Lou's commentary.
Bingo, Dan.
When he hit a double down the line, I think. Lou was like, this guy's on fire. This guy's going to be the first guy called up. All it's going to take is one something going on in the infield, and Marcelo Meyer is going to go from Worcester to Boston in a hurry, and that's good for him, too. He's building a little bit of positive momentum for a guy who, we should recall, and I think this is true, so I'm just going to say it, didn't have a single at-bat in AAA last year, right? When he got called up, he immediately had the back stiffness or whatever, and I don't think he ever actually took any AAA swings, had any AAA games last year.
I believe that's true, and don't forget also, even if you have any doubt,
nailed
just
it.
Say it with conviction and you'll be fine.
Absolutely. Politicians, that, sports talk radio, that's what you do.
Twitter, that's plug exactly how it works in 2025.
People will believe you.
They were saying, and the buzz last night was building for Marcelo Meyer on said socials as well. People, you know, from baseball analysts to super fans and beyond, all agreeing, like, next person that gets called up, no matter what, needs to be Marcelo Meyer, because that bat, I mean, he has been swinging a red hot stick the last couple of weeks.
How long till we start talking about trading Trevor Story for a closer? How about right
and
now?
Who's going to offer you a closer for Trevor Story?
Well, he's going to be healthy and have a hot start to the year and look like an all-star shortstop. And then you got a young guy that you got to get in there. It forces your hand. You got to make a deal. But we'll,
right. And I just have to come to work looking like Ryan Seacrest to get millions of dollars.
We'll let you have Trevor Story. We don't want to trade him, but we have to. Our hands are tied. We got this Marcelo Meyer guy. We got to put him on the field somewhere. So
that'll do it.
We'll give you Mason, hey, A's, you ever wanted a Trevor Story for a Mason Miller? I'd probably have to throw in a little bit more than that to get that trade done. But I'm still, that's my one concern. That's my only concern at this point, is they need a closer. They need to find a closer. I'm going to beat that drum until they give me some guy that throws 100, throws strikes, and doesn't walk anybody. Until then, I'm going to keep bitching about it here on WEI.
Stay in that lighthouse, maintain that mantle, die on that hill if you need to. It's probably not going to happen anytime soon. However, if I were Trevor Story, I would look into renting.
Oh, you do probably, think there's a chance.
Listen, Andy, if he gets hurt, not if, when he gets hurt, lower back stiffness, rotator cuff, pulled calf muscle, etc., there's a Wally Pippen ready to happen all the way down in Worcester, straight across the pike to Fenway.
We're going to continue to earn the Homer horn here on WEEI Afternoons, continue to talk about the Red Sox positivity. Are they a World Series team? Are they going to be in the World Series? Could they win the World Series? How about Garrett Crochet? Could he be your Cy Young Award winner? Is he ready to be the man from start to finish? Great story by Alex Speer in the Boston Globe today detailing the mentality that Crochet brings to the ace role with the Red Sox. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Would you take the risk of signing him, considering he has zero complete games to his name to date?
Yeah.
And how confident are you that he can be the stud we all think he's going to be?
Yeah, if it was up to me, it would have been signed yesterday. But, you know, this really is a situation. It's very complicated because of how good this guy is and how good he can be and how much money he potentially could make in free agency. You know, we're talking about a guy that in 2 years, if he goes out and throws the ball the way he's capable of, could be a $35, $40 million pitcher.
That's Lou Maloney with WEEI Afternoons late last week, talking about how it's complicated, the situation with Garrett Crochet, the Red Sox opening day starter, their ace. WEEI Afternoons here, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy, Stevens. Fitzy, question for you. Do you know when Crochet made his first career start?
I feel like it was last season.
Opening day a year ago when the White Sox made him hit their opening day starter. He had been a reliever for them. He wanted to be a starter. They gave him the opportunity in spring training to earn it. He earned it. They traded Dylan Cease, and now he's a starter. And I really enjoyed, and I would urge anybody, I don't know if we're supposed to do this. Yeah, you know, WEEI.com has great stories. So do other places. Please come to WEEI.com and read Scott McLaughlin, Mego, Terp.
Such a great story.
But also, other outlets still write great things. I'm a bit of a dinosaur. I like to read newspapers and stories. And
how do you consume your news? You read?
I read. It's weird. A lot of people don't do it. And I read the actual first person or whatever you want to call it. I don't wait for the aggregated tweet where it just gives me one pull quote from the whole story that some poor writer worked for hours and hours on. I like to give them their just desserts. So
what, do you read it by candlelight?
Oh, boy. I like to read stories. I used to be a writer. I appreciate when people appreciate.
Hot newspaper here.
Son of a guns. But Alex Speer, Boston Globe, had a nice story on Crochet. And it was funny because it's not totally relevant to now. It was about how he became a starter a year ago with the White Sox. But I think it gives you some insight into his competitive fire, his nature, different things like that. For example, I believe it was his first spring training start last year, Fitzy, where the general manager said, oh, by the way, we forgot to tell you, if you don't get out of the first inning in less than 15 pitches, we're not letting you come back out for the second inning. And he went out and mowed him down through 12 pitches or whatever it was. And they were like, wait, is that how easy it is? We just have to tell you what we want you to do and you'll go out and do it kind of thing. But
he's that good.
He's that good, but he's also, I think, that competitive. They wanted to shut him down last year. After, remember all the trade talk at the deadline, and there was some of that talk that he said he wouldn't go somewhere and pitch in the postseason unless they gave him a big extension and all these things. Well, they wanted to shut him down. He said, no, I need to prove that I can make every start. Every time the rotation calls my name, I want to be out there. He started 32 games. They managed it. Some of those were four innings or less over the second half of the season. But I think this is a guy that has elite stuff. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he also has a little bit of that makeup in that he has that ego, swagger, cockiness, whatever you want to call it, that Pedro had, that Josh Beckett had.
Edge that an ace who's a true stopper should have that
absolutely.
We haven't had since 2017, Chris Sale?
Absolutely. He has that. And that is what is exciting to me as much as the potential 100-mile-an-hour fastball and his repertoire of pitches and all that. I think he has the ace mentality. I think the ace mentality, Fitzy, is actually harder to come by than ace stuff. I think there's a lot of pitchers that have, they throw 100 miles an hour, they got a breaking ball, they got this, they got that. But I don't know if they have the cojones. I don't know if they have the makeup internally. The intestinal fortitude, I think Bobby the Brain Heenan used to call it in fake wrestling. I think he has that. I think you're looking at the next great superstar in Boston sports in Crochet.
Oh, I think that was even my 3-point stance last week as well as one day. Like, get ready, the next guy that's going to help the Red Sox go to the next level is here. And as we have wondered aloud, who is the next star? Who's going to be that next somebody? Everybody buys jerseys, both authentic and out of garbage bags on the secondhand market of, you know, Tatum's there, Jaylen Brown, your guy's there, Derek White-ish there. Drake May seems to be there. No one on the Red Sox is really there. Garrett Crochet is about to take that next big step and go there this year. And then the best part is, what's going to make this team super fun? There might be a bunch of guys running in line after him, not as aces, just as stars. We might have a whole boatload of stars on the Sox before you know it, Andy.
And I'm waiting for those moments that you know come where it's the sixth inning and there's a guy on first and third and he has that strikeout and he does some sort of fist bump. Like those visual representations of that dog, that ace, that he's going to have opportunities to make. Let's go to the phone lines. Because if there's one person, I guess, who could screw up Garrett Crochet beyond injuries, Matt in Rhode Island may have pinpointed it. Matt in Rhode Island, what are your thoughts on Andrew Bailey?
Yeah, you know, first, but I just say Crochet's been watching Tarek Skubal in that division for a while. I think he's right there. He could be that guy. But yeah, I don't really like Bailey. I haven't been a fan of the analytical driven, you know, picking coach. You saw last year. When Bayo finally went back to what he did, because every pitcher does different stuff good. You know, he had a pretty good, I believe it was August or September. You know, it's just my belief. And they got the Tanner Houck this spring, spring training, wanting them to do what they want them to do. And I don't believe it. He thinks he invented pitching backwards. And I'm not sure how much Breslau has to do with it too, but just got to watch out for that, because that could run right through the pitching staff.
Sorry. All right. Thanks for the call, Matt. It's getting a little windy out there, wherever you're calling from.
Well, that comes with the hot takes coming from the 401.
Maybe that was just him spewing it. It was his hot breath that was making it sound like wind.
With Andrew Bailey, it could be a curious case to follow, because while in the long run he might be right with some of his suggestions, analytics, and mechanical fixes, at the same time, it may at first impact the pitchers to a point where they wonder, like, what did this guy do to me?
Yeah, you don't want the pitching coach to get in the way of the talent, because I think there are guys on this rotation that have the raw ability, the talent, the stuff to be really good pitchers. But he also, they did a pretty good job last year. They rolled three guys out there with 30 starts. They, I think, maximized their pitching staff a year ago, and their pitching staff is better this year. So if they maximize it again, the results will be even better. Coming up here on WEEI Afternoons, we're going to transition to a little Patriots talk. Because Drake May, I believe he's in Mexico as well at some golf tournament fundraiser thing. And he had a sit down with Kay Adams. He talks a little bit about his role in Elliott Wolf's offseason. And it's also early in a new week. That means we need to catch up with some of the mock drafts. I love mock draft talk. So that's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.